What do you think the greatest gift of the holidays is? Internet? I'd say internet. Yes, absolutely. Yeah, it's of course, as easy as it's always been. You get an iMac 10 minutes out of the box, you're on the internet. But now, Apple gives you your own personal website. You can post your photographs for all your family to see all over the world and your iMovies. And now you're the purveyor of, you're the generator of, you're the author of great stuff. Isn't it nicer to give than to receive?
I forgot how it goes.
You're gonna go.
Oh, that's good. That's good. Let's try that. Hello, and welcome to the Coldcast, the jolliest 30-minute Apple conversation you're going to hear all week long. I'm your host, Santa Fun Claus Lijah, and I'm joined today by two of my favorite Christmas elves, Alex Excelsior Heath and Buster Hine. Hello, Christmas elves.
Hey. Hello.
And of course, no Christmas story would be complete without the Grinch. Please welcome one Mr. Leander Caney. I've heard you've been very naughty this year, Leander.
Extremely naughty, yeah.
No gifts for you, but you can always come bounce on my knee.
Bounce on your knee or just crush it?
But seriously, come over. Welcome to the Coldcast, everyone. Believe it or not, we actually have some Apple stuff to talk about in what could be the slowest news week of the entire year, eh, guys?
Pretty slow.
It's pretty slow.
I think we should just start making up new stories. Like, we should just spend an hour before we do the show just making up stories, and then we should mix them in with the true stories, and then just not ever
Apple
talk about
Tesla.
Apple and Tesla merged this year. We'd actually probably get super popular from that because people would start reporting. We'd get like on the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times. We'd have all these incredible exclusives that would turn out to not be true at all.
Yeah, like that kid who made $72 million trading on Wall Street.
What are you talking about?
You hear about that one?
No.
That
was
in your
magazine story.
Wait a second. I saw that kid. Didn't he make like $300,000?
I haven't seen the latest, as of a couple of days ago, he was like some kid that fooled the New York Magazine of writing a story. He made 72 million.
Yeah.
Then
he came out and said that he didn't.
So he just tricked. What publication did he trick?
New York Magazine, I think. I think they were the original one. Pretty sure it was them.
Yeah.
They got picked up everywhere, right? It's like,
so that was fake?
Then someone, yeah.
Yeah, I never heard that. I never heard that was fake, Leander. I just heard that happened.
Yeah, I just heard it happen. He made like hundreds of thousands trading penny stocks or
that's
something
exactly
like
what
that.
I heard. He was like 17, right?
No, yeah. They made it up.
But yeah, it's all completely fabricated.
Oh my gosh.
Oh, well.
Gave me like such good hopes that I could become a great stock trader.
Yeah, Buster was just telling me he was going to quit and go trading full time.
Go trading penny stocks.
I know. Who wasn't thinking that?
Anyway, for those listening, welcome. I just want to say you're going to want to stick around to the end because we're going to be doing a all-new, almost said faves and raves, get to know your cultist holiday edition. We're going to be talking about the gifts we'd love to get from other people. These would probably be the things that you have zero chance of actually getting because they might be too expensive or too luxurious. So stay tuned to the end for that. I want to thank Audible for supporting this episode. Y'all know Audible, right? Home to over 150,000 different forms of audio entertainment, audiobooks, ebooks across a zillion different genres. They literally have everything that you could possibly want. And if you wanted to get your hands on our very own Leander Caney's book, it's one of the classics. I mean, it's right up there with A Tale of Two Cities, Moby Dick, and then there's what's that, Buster?
War and Peace.
War and Peace.
Yeah.
And then there, of course, that's the Bible. and then there's Johnny Ive, the genius behind Apple's greatest products. You can get that book totally free at audiblepodcast.com/cultcast. And you can listen to the entire thing. Unfortunately, it's not narrated by our own Leander Caney, but it is narrated by someone immensely talented, and he'll read the entire book to you. It'll be like Leander's laying there next to you, whispering the story into your ear, which is the way we all want to hear the book. Let's be honest. There's a nice fire going. You have a nice dessert brandy sitting there. You're laying on a furry animal rug of some kind, and Leander's whispering the Johnny Ive story to you. You could have that experience if you get the Johnny Ive book. Or let me suggest another book that I've been going through that I've really been enjoying. I have been listening to a book called Money, Master the Game, 7 Simple Steps to Financial Freedom. Sounds hokey, but it's actually really, really well written, and it's kind of practical steps for you to invest in your own life. It's written by Tony Robbins. Do you guys know who Tony Robbins is?
Yeah, yeah.
Giants of a man. And a lot of people know him as kind of like that self-help guru, which I hate using that term because I don't really think that's what he does. But he's a really great writer and a very inspirational book. And I'm only about one chapter in so far. So I just started it, but I'm going through the audiobook and it is absolutely fantastic. And I've already learned a lot just in the first hour of listening to it. We've got about 19 hours to go. But, you know, it's great because I've been listening to it while I've been at the gym. And so I'll be through it in no time because you guys know I spend at least 2 or 3 hours at the gym every day grunting incredibly loudly as I lift just huge barbells. You know, I got to keep in shape, and I like to learn while I do that. I want to thank Audible for supporting this episode. Remember, that's audiblepodcast.com/cultcast. You'll get a free audiobook of your choice when you visit that URL. Plus, the audiobook is yours to keep. There's no DRM on it, and it works on virtually any MP3 player ever made. Thanks to Audible for supporting this episode. Okay, guys, let's talk about... Actually, before we jump into the news, Leander, I wanted to ask you about the Cult of Mac redesign that you were talking about before we officially started recording. So we're getting a big redesign, yeah?
Yep.
How excited are you on a scale of 1 to 5?
Five, for sure. It looks great. It really looks amazing.
I saw some screenshots, and it does look good.
Yeah, and it has a lot of, it's a responsive site. That's the most important thing. So It'll automatically resize to adapt itself to whatever screen you're using. So if it's an iPhone, it'll give you the iPhone-sized sites, and if it's on an iPad, appropriately, and the 6 Plus, whatever.
So it's powered by Squarespace.
Yeah.
Leander spent an entire year moving all the blog posts over.
I know, there's a sneaky redirect in the background. Squarespace.com/cult of Mac.
So it's going to go live tonight, and it's so by the time people hear this, they'll probably see it. So it's going to be a totally different experience when they go visit the site.
Yeah, it's a new look. It's a refreshed look. It's pretty clean and modern looking. Hopefully, people won't get confused and go, what happened? Where'd the old site go? I got to write a post about it today. In fact, and we'll stick that to the top so that. Hopefully people will see that and not get too confused. But yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. It looks really amazing. Hopefully it's a good foundation for the next few years. Yeah.
So can we won't have too much feature requests?
Sure.
So I really like leaving comments on different posts, just like scathing, rude comments. but the problem is that I leave so many, I'm finding it hard to do it in a creative fashion. So I was hoping that you could make a button where I can press it and it would kind of start me off with like a really like mean thing to say. Then I can just kind of like it put the title in and it would add the author's name along followed by an insult of some kind. Right. And then I could just edit it real fast and then, and hit apply and have the comment go in.
Right. And so across multiple posts too, right?
Oh, that would be even better. Yeah.
That sounds like a great idea. Like an auto insult generator, Buster, I can't believe what, something more on you are.
Yeah, I prefer criticism. To make familial attacks of some kind. Like you're obviously an idiot, but your mother has got to be even stupider than you. Something along those lines.
Right. Okay. Well, you could probably have we could probably do it so you have all sorts of different choices. You could tick all kinds of boxes.
Oh, now you're thinking. Now you're thinking. I like where this is headed. Actually, what's funny enough is this would actually probably be really popular. Can you imagine if you could do that? I mean, how angry some people get when you make a post about something and they get so angry that they feel the need to totally rip you a new A.
Okay, that's going on the on the list.
Boom. Priority number one after the redesign.
And if anyone else has good ideas like that, you know, please let us know.
We need ideas. We need fresh. We need to think outside the box here.
Right.
Some things that we could do.
Well, we want to keep people. We want to have, you know, because everyone comments on Twitter and on Facebook, and you know, like other sites like Recode have turned off commenting altogether, because you know they say, well, the conversation's not on the site anymore, which I think is a shame because. That's one of the nice things. We had a huge commenting community on the site a couple of years ago. Maybe the time has gone. I don't think so, but it'd be nice to bring people back with innovations like this, innovative features.
It actually, like self-generators. It would build a huge community around people just loving to rip you a new A.
Good one.
It's interesting how some publications churn off comments. I always think that's a very curious choice. In fact, have you guys ever heard of PewDiePie?
Yeah.
You have heard of him.
I've heard of him. He's got about 7 million YouTube followers.
So this is crazy. For those who don't know who he is, he has YouTube's most popular, most subscribed to channel. This guy, I think he's Swedish, and all he does is play video games, and then he has his picture laid over the video game footage. And just go through and play video games and make funny comments. And he has YouTube's most popular channel. And he had a huge, 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 huge following of people in his community. And of course, they all use the YouTube comments to leave comments about what he's doing and what he's playing. And he turned off comments recently. Because he got tired of people using it to like rip each other apart. And of course, then it got filled with spam. But I kind of feel like that community is essential. You have to have a way to talk to the people that are into what you're doing.
The sites that have been turning off comments, they make the argument that social media is where all that happens now. So like Twitter and Facebook and stuff, that's where all the people want to comment and interact with your stuff anyway.
See, but I don't think that's true, because in order for me to make a comment on something specific like a Cult of Mac post, I need to see what everyone else's comments are so I can choose all the ones that are the ones I want to flame. And go after them viciously, right?
Well, right, but going the extra step. A lot of people just read this summary, right? They look at it on, they see a headline and a picture on Facebook, and then they just come on at that. They don't actually read the story.
Really? You think that's what happens?
Yeah, that's definitely
happens. Happens all the time.
People don't read the story when they go to the site.
Yeah.
they just scroll to the bottom and comment.
So they just see the title and then go to the bottom and make a comment?
Yeah. This happens all the time.
Wow, I made some wrong assumptions. I guess I just figured everyone must at least read like the first couple paragraphs.
But everyone, you know, all the publishers now are all, you know, bending over backwards to try to game the Facebook algorithm. And that's what this big fight, you know, Gawker Media, Nick Denton's, you know, Gawker Empire, mm-hmm. his big shakeup over there, you know, he's feeling the heat from BuzzFeed and from Upworthy. Who are these, you know, they reverse engineer the Facebook algorithm, and they very, very carefully craft content to be, you know, shared on Facebook. Mm-hmm. I think they're caught in danger. They could be like Zynga, you know, which is the super successful game company that, you know, found blockbuster success with Farmville. But then as soon as Facebook started changing the way it did business, you know, they were locked out overnight and their business almost, you know, collapsed.
They're struggling big time.
Right. And, you know, because they decided to hook their wagon to, you know, to that one pony, Facebook. And of course, Facebook doesn't really, you know, I mean, they're serving Facebook's interest, not the publisher's interest. And in fact, you know, they just changed their algorithm. And we've seen, you know, we took a bit of a hit because of it, too. And I'm sure a lot of publishers did as well.
So when you say they changed their algorithm, you mean that so people are, you know, they have subscribed to the Cult of Mac page, so they want to see your updates in their timeline. So Facebook just pretty much took those out, right? So you don't see them anymore.
Yeah. Well, it only a fraction. I mean, it's tiny now. It's a tiny, tiny fraction of the people who liked our page get to actually see our posts.
Unless
and if we
want
to reach them, we have to pay. Yeah. It's outrageous. But I mean, you kind of see it from Facebook's point of view, which is that, you know, like there's so much content going through there now that to keep it manageable, they have to trim, you know, people's news feeds. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they try to pay attention to what the kind of stuff you look at, the kind of stuff you like, the kind of stuff you interact with. So, you know, like, are you going to get all this stuff, you know, are you going to get content from all these people, all these companies, all these publishers whose page you liked, or are you going to see stuff, you know, from your cousins and your auntie and dog pictures and stuff like that? So, you know, like, they have to, I do think they do have to juggle that, but they've tuned it, I think, to make sure that commercial interests now have to, you know, pour money into their coffers in order to be able to reach this audience.
Which and it's kind of sucks because then instead of seeing the content you want to see, you're seeing stuff from people that you may never have heard of or that you're not interested in at all. I know Facebook tries to determine what you're interested in, but if you've liked a page, you've cast your lot. Like you're saying, I want to hear from these people.
I think so. But I mean, I think, you know, like some people go Facebook crazy, right? Like crazy. And they start liking stuff every, you know, left, right, and center. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, it goes back to AOL, you know, with a walled garden, with all the groups you had on AOL. Like, you know, it's kind of almost the same model. They're creating an alternative private internet where they control all the content and suck up all the money. I mean, it's difficult for a publisher. I think publishers who court Facebook too much are courting a very great danger of putting all their eggs into that one Facebook basket. And you know, as you can see, as Facebook grows and becomes more and more influential, it's more and more dangerous a game to play. I mean, the payoff can be huge because look at BuzzFeed. I mean, they do insane traffic and audience numbers. But you know, I don't know. It seems very. I think it's a very fickle audience, and it's a very dangerous strategy for a publisher.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, to just put all your eggs in the Facebook basket, because they've shown before they'll do drastic redesigns. And change everything and change the layouts and change, you know, what you see in your newsfeed. I think Zynga is a really good example of that. I mean, I don't even know what Zynga's doing anymore.
Yeah, they laid off a bunch of people.
Lay off a ton of people, huh?
They're renting out their offices to all these other startups.
Are they
now.
Really?
Maybe. Yeah, I was down there the weekend. My kids take a coding class.
Oh, that's cool.
With one of them, yeah.
With the CEO. He's like, times are tough. He's pulling on his collar.
Yeah, no, he cashed out. He's building mansions up in Marin.
For himself or for other
people?
Yeah,
no, for himself. He made out like a bandit.
Mansions, plural.
Yeah, right. No, I think it probably is.
Well, let's move on to some actual Apple news, but I just want to make a quick announcement. This will be fun. This next Saturday at 1 p.m. Pacific time, if you're interested, we're going to be doing a live hangout. We haven't done one of these in forever, so we're going to be doing a live Google Hangout. We'll be talking about, I don't even know, whatever it is we can muster, whatever interesting topics we can come up with. But also, if you want to suggest something, head on over to our Facebook page, facebook.com/TheCultCast, and we'll put a post there. Leave your comments. Let us know what you want us to talk about. Come hang out with us. It's going to be fun. Leander will be, you know, recovering from a hangover. Buster will be stroking his beard. Alex, are you going to be there?
Is it the 20th or the 27th? Are we doing it this Saturday?
It's this Saturday, the 20th.
Okay. Yeah, probably. Yeah.
Okay, cool. So 1 p.m. Pacific time, go to live.thecultcast.com and come hang out with us in a live fashion. Let's interact with each other and have a few laughs together, shall we? Okay, let's talk about some Apple news. Buster, we had a development this week in the Apple iTunes court case that couldn't seem to find a plaintiff.
Yeah, real shocker.
So we had a development. Apple actually won a lawsuit this week. And why don't you give us some details on what was actually going on?
Yeah, the jury unanimously decided that Apple wasn't liable, I guess, of the damages that the plaintiffs were seeking, like $1 billion in damages.
But there were no plaintiffs, right? They eventually all dropped out or got disqualified?
Yeah, they all dropped out, and then they flew in an emergency one. And I think that really just hurt the case. And Apple asked them to drop it altogether last Monday. Mm-hmm. And they still went ahead with it. And then the jury, it didn't take them too long to decide that it was a security measure, not, you know, an antitrust issue.
So they were seeking $1 billion in damages, or up to $1 billion in damages from Apple for conspiring to kill competing music services. I actually remember when I had my iPod, I remember when I think it was Real Networks had a music service that you could use to put music onto your iPod in a subscription, you know, with a subscription. Mm-hmm. And I might have even used it for a while. But then, of course, Apple fixed that loophole,
right?
And you know, you couldn't do that anymore. But that was kind of one of the main arguments, right? As people were, the lawyers for the plaintiffs were saying, well, Apple wouldn't let anyone else put music onto the iPod, so
right.
They were stifling
competition. And then Apple's argument was, no, we were just preventing hackers from getting into iTunes, because if somebody got a file into iTunes that violated like their agreement with the record labels, they could have taken away their contracts and stuff. So I don't know. There was,
yeah, I wonder if the lawyers are they going to go after the record companies now, because I mean that was Apple's argument, right? Which obviously convinced the jury with that it was, you know, their hands were tied. This was like, it wasn't their decision; it was the record companies, and they had to do this to be in compliance with the contracts they'd signed.
Yeah, I think the plaintiff said they're already planning an appeal.
Well, of course. I mean, look how much money is at stake. I mean, they're suing for $300 million to a billion, and they're going to take 30% of that.
Right. They're trying to get a billion, but I mean, it's been going on for a decade, and Apple's kind of proven that it's not really going to work. I wonder who the legal team is behind it, and you know, who actually got the case going forward, because it feels like maybe it was just the lawyers trying to get a piece of the apple pie.
It kind of seems like frivolous to me.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not a legal expert. I want to caveat with that. though I may argue passionately about things.
But I mean, the case was started building in 2005, but then their main argument was that from 2006 to 2009, Apple started blocking competition. But they already wanted to sue Apple before that even happened. So I don't know. I think it's suspect.
I think that Apple just has a ton of money, and lawyers know that maybe they'll be able to get a settlement out of them. And if they actually win a case, then Apple actually has the funds to pay. So it just paints a target on
right,
back.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, they go where the money is. I mean, you know, that's what, and they asked Dillinger, right? Why do you rob banks? Well, that's where the money is. But the whole thing was contentious. I remember when Real Networks released that system that allowed you to put music onto your iPod, because I mean, no one else was selling MP3 players. The only MP3 player that anybody was buying was the iPod, and at the height of it, they sold what, 380 million of them or something like that.
Wow.
You know, so they had a, and it was 80%. I don't think it ever dropped below 75% market share.
No, it was like the iPod and then the hundreds of other crappy MP3 players there towards the end.
Right, but there was like a dozen users between them, right? So, you know, they managed to sew up the entire, you know, that nascent digital music industry. And, you know, I mean, so they were, when Real released that system, I mean, Jobs was outraged, and he said, this is like a hack. You know, this isn't the kind of thing you expect from a company. You know, this is the kind of thing you expect from hackers to do.
It's like if they hacked your Xbox so that you could play PlayStation games on it, right?
Right.
It's the exact same thing.
Exactly.
And of course, Microsoft's not going to want to let you do that, because, I mean, A, they make royalties off, you know, all the games that they license and stuff. But B, I mean, what if you screw up their console and write some kind of malicious code or just bad code, and it breaks the system, and now they have to deal with it from a customer service perspective.
Exactly. That's exactly what it is. Yeah.
That's and totally it just seems it crazy that they can even be sued over this, because, I mean, you look at it from Apple's perspective, it's like they created this marketplace, they created the device, but there are other marketplaces and there are other devices that you can use. It's not like you have to use their system.
No, but there was an interesting, who wrote a perspective on the, you remember Jobs' letter? It was like thoughts about DRM. Mm-hmm. And he put this sort of call to action. He was saying that DRM is hurting the whole, you know, music industry, and, you know, we would totally support getting rid of DRM, and we would love to see, you know, a system where you could buy music from any source you liked, and you could load it onto your your iPod or your iPhone. This I think was like in the iPhone era, right? It was like later, much later on. But they were saying that, you know, it seemed like it was a very brave, thing to do, because here was one of the, you know, here was Jobs and Apple, who'd actually built the system, you know, were the advocates for the ones for tearing it down. But someone wrote a perspective saying that they were just saying the writing on the wall, that that in fact this is coming from the record companies, because they were trying to break Apple's monopoly on the MP3 player market. Did anyone see that too? Someone wrote that up recently. Oh, I know. It was on, Fortune. Philip Elmer DeWitt. It was actually quite interesting. I would never heard that one before.
I used to know a guy that testified in lawsuits as a quote-unquote expert. And when he did that, he would get paid, you know, $500, $600 an hour.
Yeah. I've seen that with the Apple cases, like $800 for a testimony.
Yeah, right? I mean, these guys are like, you know, professional, again, quote-unquote experts in their fields. And you have to go through some, who knows what process to become an expert. and then all of a sudden you can charge like outrageous sums of money for testifying in court cases. speaking of carriers, I thought this was really cool. T-Mobile this week had an Un-carrier event, and they announced rollover data, right, Buster?
They did.
So tell me exactly how this is going to work. I thought this was really cool, and I've always wondered why carriers haven't, you know, released a feature like this.
Yeah, me and my girlfriend were just talking about it the other day, because it's like rollover minutes, like AT&T used to have, only for your data, so that at the end of the month, any of the data that you didn't use for your plan goes into, what is it, data stash is what that they're calling it.
Yeah, and right.
Then you can use that if you're ever tapped out of data, you know, later on in the year. And they're also giving you like 10 gigabytes for free just to start out with.
In your data stash?
Yeah. So yeah. I think it's cool. I mean, at least they're doing different things. I feel like it's been a long time coming that somebody should have been doing this.
I feel like out of all the different carriers, T-Mobile is the only one pushing things forward.
Yeah.
And really mixing it up. And honestly, if they had a better network, like the only thing that really prevents me from going with them is that their network is questionable. I would totally, totally go with them because they have so many great pro-consumer practices. And I think this is a great one. Like, you pay for your data every month. Okay. And so why do they take it from you every month? So that you accidentally go over and they can charge you more money or get you on a higher plan, right? Mm-hmm. But I think you wrote in your piece, or maybe they said this at the event, it's kind of like when if you were to go to the gas station and fill up your tank and then you didn't use it, so the gas guy came and siphoned it back out.
Yeah, at the end of the month. Yeah.
Was that their analogy?
Yeah, exactly.
Which I like that.
I do too. It's essentially what's happening, right? You buy 10 gigs or whatever, and then at the end of the month, the carrier says, oh, you didn't use it? Okay, cool. We're just going to take this. But if you go over your allotment next month, we're going to charge you an outrageous fee.
Yeah. With AT&T rollover minutes, I had like thousands of minutes saved up too, like by the end of it. So I'm hoping like if you use T-Mobile's data stash, it's going to be like, you know, 20 gigs by the end of the year that just went unused. I don't know what you're going to do with that though.
So they said that you could store the data for 12 months, right?
Yeah.
But they didn't say how much you could actually store. Is there a limit on it?
They didn't. They said that they give you 10 gigs for free, and then after you've used that, then your extra will start accumulating into your account. So you have to
use that 10 gigs first.
Yeah, it doesn't launch until January, so I'm not really sure exactly how it's going to work.
That's pretty cool, though. I mean, you get 10 gigs of buffer, essentially, for free. Yeah, just the T-Mobile network. I don't know how it is in your guys' area, but in Seattle, I hear mixed reviews. It's either great or you have no signal.
Right. Yeah, same here.
So let's talk about Bose. Bose, there was a story this week that Bose was planning to take on Beats Music with its own music streaming service, to which I just shook my head and put my face in my hands.
Oh,
we do not need another music streaming service.
Yeah, especially from Bose, right?
I mean,
they're a headphone company, and it doesn't make any sense because nobody buys Beats headphones because of Beats Music service, you know? So nobody's going to buy Bose headphones just because they have, a high fidelity audio service as well.
You know what they're going to do, though? You know what this is? This is like the battle for the airwaves. This is like being able to get a button on the front of a music player that takes you straight to a particular source. You know, like on the old FM radio dial, you know, you'd have presets for different radio stations. Well, this is what I think all the different, you know, hardware manufacturers are doing. It's going to get to the point where instead of you streaming from like a connected device, like an iPhone or an iPad, and you play it to the player takes care of some of that itself. So it'll have a range of buttons on it, and you hit a button and it'll stream, you know, from Pandora, or it'll stream from iTunes Radio. And I think this is why they want to do this, because they want to be able to get that. You know, they want to have the big red button where it streams from their own service, where they control the stream.
But why? I mean, they're in the headphone business. They're not in the software, the media business. Why does it make sense for them to get into that too when they're probably not going to be good at it?
Probably like the carriers, you know, the phone carriers, you know, they don't want to be just dumb pipes. Mm-hmm, they want to get some of that revenue. You know, the revenue is really in the services. Uh-huh. You know, if you pay every month, you pay a subscription. And they would have subscription revenue. That's probably where the real money is, not on selling the hardware. They might even do what the printer business does, which is like take a loss on the hardware and make it up in the subscription.
Yeah, I mean the software is where the money is.
I don't know. Streaming services streaming services don't make money, though.
Yeah, they're not making tons of money. Like, Spotify's struggling.
Like, Spotify
isn't profitable yet.
Yeah, Spotify's still VC funded. Yeah, they're not profitable. I remember Jimmy Iovine was talking about how Spotify is, there's no way they're going to be profitable with the business model they have now.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I don't know what they charge versus how much they need to pay out. The margins aren't there.
I don't know where all the money is going, because I was just reading a letter from a Sony exec to I think the people who work in the Sony music business, and he was saying that the money they get from streaming services like Spotify is so abhorrently low that they absolutely are making it their number one priority this year to figure out how to increase the revenue from it. And he said, if you get 1 million plays on Spotify for a particular song, you get a check for $60.
Yeah.
I mean, $60. So where is the money going? Because there's people paying for Spotify, and there's advertisers.
I think Pharrell got like $3,000 or $4,000 off of like 60 million streams of Happy on Pandora.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like, it was absurd. Yeah.
They don't make any money. I mean, that's why Taylor Swift pulled her album off Spotify, and was trying to get more artists to do the same. And the business model is just not there. And that's what the rumors are saying, that Apple and Beats, they're trying to get a business model that the artists can benefit from and that's cheap enough for people to want to buy, which is, you know, so it sounds like the iTunes store back in the early days, but... They're looking at a market that's pretty oversaturated. You know, if Bose is coming out with a streaming service, I'd say it's pretty saturated. And they're trying to make something that everyone benefits from.
I don't know what the answer is for streaming services, because obviously streaming services are great for consumers, right? We all love to listen to music for free, and we don't necessarily want to pay for it. And then, of course, it keeps people from stealing the album when they can just stream it for free very easily off of Spotify. But then... if they're not making any money off of it, it's kind of like, I can understand from their perspective why they wouldn't want to do it. But I don't know what the other solution, I don't know what another solution could be, because people don't want to buy albums anymore. Do you guys foresee a time, Lander, are you ever going to go start buying albums again so that you can own them?
No, never. And I don't think anyone is. I mean, the music industry is has been completely transformed. It doesn't. Mm-hmm. That doesn't make any sense anymore.
I don't think they can go back to it.
I don't know why artists are doing it, you know, any longer, making albums. I mean, they're stuck in this old mindset. I read a great piece, and I'm just searching, trying to find it here now so I can talk about it sensibly. But this guy from the music industry, he runs an independent record label up in Chicago, and he's been a musician. He's in a band. They've been touring like Eastern Europe. It's not a huge band, but... you know, they still tour. And he was saying that, I don't know, why are people nostalgic about the old music industry? It was utterly corrupt and broken, mm-hmm. and completely artist unfriendly. The only people who ever made any money from albums, you know, from the LP and the CD era, was the music industry, the music executives. The artists, except for a very small few, always got bent over and, you know,
taken advantage of from the rear end.
Exactly. So he was saying he finds, you know, the people who are complaining about the music industry, the old music industry and the death of the old music industry are, you know, the music executives, and that the new music industry is much, much better for artists. If they can figure out how to make it work. Hmm. And, you know, this is why I should have, you know, I'd like to pull it up. I can't remember exactly why he was saying, but he was saying it was easier to reach fans. It's easier to communicate. It's easier to get people to shows. You know, and that really there was never any money being made from albums anyway, because you'd always get an advance and then you'd be in the record company's pocket. So the you know, this idea that you'd make an album, and even if it was a big seller, it was, I think they had the same situation in the old days as they do now, which is that you could have like an album selling millions and millions, and a band at the end of the day actually sees very, very little of that.
It reminds me, what you're saying reminds me of the situation with Prince, one of my favorite artists.
Right.
And I remember reading, it was Bono talking about Prince and how when U2 was making music, they didn't sell the rights to their songs. They agreed to not take money up front so that they could keep the rights to their songs, which was kind of unusual at the time. So now that they're famous, they make all the money from their music. But Prince doesn't own any of his actual music. Like, all of his most popular albums, the record company owns. So they can do whatever they want with them. And plus, you know, he doesn't make any money from them.
Right, exactly. Yeah, this, I mean, you know, look at Michael Jackson owns the Beatles catalog, and you know, this is what they're saying. The money, if there's any money, it's you know, for an artist, it's in publishing, it's in music publishing, owning the rights to the songs. And of course, every single band always signs that away.
That's crazy to hear. I would, because if I were approaching it, I'd be like, I don't care if I make any money up front, but I'm keeping ownership. I mean, this is your song. This is just something that you created, right? Why would you sign that away for?
Because that's the deal. I mean, you know, you don't get that song distributed unless you do that.
I see. That's, so they wouldn't even take you on unless you're willing to sell your soul.
No, that's crazy. Right. Exactly. That's the business. That's where the music companies are making their money.
Of course, now, as you mentioned, it's so easy to distribute your album in so many different ways. And you have Spotify, you have Bandcamp, you have SoundCloud. It's really easy to reach fans. But of course, the problem now is you really have to have a lot of talent to make it. Right. And, you know, I think most bands probably wouldn't be able to see this about themselves, but they're just not very good. I mean, I would say out of 100 bands, how many are actually great? 5, you know, maybe less. And the rest of them are making maybe mediocre music, and then maybe like 80% of them are making terrible, terrible music. I'm just making these figures up. But how many bad bands have you heard live? I feel like every show I go to, it's just a bunch of bands that maybe are just not that great. So it'd be really tough to make, you know, music streaming or selling your or make money streaming your music or selling your music to fans when your music just really isn't that great.
Well, then you're not going to have any fans, and it's not doesn't matter. I mean, I don't see that argument. Like, I don't know. I don't get that.
No, I think it makes sense because even if you're not great, there are people that will support you just because they're like, yeah, I want to support music. So, but in order to make it mainstream, I think you have to be really talented.
I love music.
Yeah, but I'm not.
I love music and I support music, but I'm not going to support
like
a crappy
music.
Artist.
I'm going to support you because I like your good music.
Wait, sorry. You guys are both talking at the same time. Buster.
I'm not going to support bad music. I'm going to support good music. Just like I'm not going to go out and buy my buddy's girlfriend's shitty paintings just to support her. I'm not going to pay for that. I'm going to pay for the good stuff that I like.
I hope your buddy doesn't listen to this.
I hope he does.
Dude, is that why you didn't buy my girlfriend's paintings? I kept telling you about my girlfriend's paintings and you never bought any. You're like, did I not tell you why? Well, how do you guys support your favorite bands?
Well, I go to concerts. Like, yeah, Leander says, bands make all their money from concerts. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So that's
and,
the best
and the
way
stuff they sell
them.
At concerts, t-shirts.
Yeah, and t-shirts, you know, and stuff, merchandise. Yeah. So if you really like a band, you should come and see them when they come through town.
Yeah, it kind of seems like they can't really make money selling music anymore.
Yeah, or buy their merchandise online, too.
Yeah, you can always do that.
Yeah, I mean, it is way harder, but I think you kind of maybe some artists probably should use that as a way to like sell experiences. Like Kanye West, you know, he doesn't worry too much about his record sales as much as like he goes on gigantic stadium tours that are, you know, huge experiences. Same thing with, you know, Taylor Swift and Beyonce. That's kind of the big thing now.
Yeah, I bet you Beyonce's main form of revenue is probably all of her different advertising contracts.
Well, that and like her, like Jay-Z has like a $100 million contract with some company for his concerts that he makes like to perform.
Really? Is it like Jay-Z sponsored by Jamba Juice?
No, it's like an entertainment company, you know, kind of like the same thing, like the Michael Jackson deal that he had to perform at Wembley before he died. And they just pay him a flat fee up front. You know, and then they get money from whatever's extra.
Did you guys hear about there's one of those companies, Buster, that you were just talking about, like an entertainment company? They were trying to get ABBA to go on tour. Leander, did you hear this?
No.
They offered ABBA
$1 billion.
Yeah. What?
They offered ABBA $1 billion to do a 140 city tour, I think. And ABBA turned it down.
No.
Well, they don't look so hot in their, you know, tight, spangly suits.
They would wear looser-fitting clothing now. It'd probably have sequins all over it. It'd be very flowy. But
thank goodness they turned it down. I mean, they did a real service to mankind. They should get better than that.
$1 billion, though.
That's an awful lot of money, yeah.
$1 billion. I mean, it's crazy how much some of these artists can just make doing Vegas for, you know, two or three months.
Garth Brooks makes a ton of money just in Vegas. Britney Spears, too.
Britney Spears is playing down there?
Doesn't she? Yeah, I think so.
Dang. Oops.
Dude, we're going. Shoot.
We're going again. Okay. Well, let's move on to our last segment of the show. We're going to be doing a holiday edition, Get to Know Your Cultist. And I would really love to hear what you guys think about gifts. We talked about gifts before, gifts that we'd like to give. But, you know, every year you want to get something cool, and oftentimes you end up with a tube full of men's underpants that are very skimpy from your aunt, and the whole thing gets weird. So I want to hear what you guys think about gifts that you would love to get but probably won't, because maybe they're just too expensive or too nice, or your family members aren't good gift givers. Does anyone
Are we doing like, how many are we doing? Like,
let's do two. We'll do two rounds.
Oh. Two?
Let's come up with two. Yeah.
Oh, I only had one.
Okay, well, let's just do one, and then Alex and I can do two.
That's one more than me.
Alex, do you want to go first since Leander is thinking about his?
Sure. I would really love the new Fujifilm camera, the X100T.
Dude,
have you seen that?
You stole mine.
Are you serious?
Yes, that's what I was going to say.
No.
That's hilarious. Yeah, yeah.
That is hilarious.
Okay, well, tell people why we both want it.
Well, it just looks gorgeous, first of all. It's got that kind of Leica design, like retro, but it's got the state-of-the-art viewfinder, the lens, even though it's fixed. I think you can get like tele and wide converters for it, can't you?
Yeah, you can.
Yeah, but like it's got a fixed, I think, is it 25 millimeter lens?
I think it's 35.
Might be 32.
32 maybe, yeah. I'm not sure what it is after the conversion.
Yeah. Everything about it's supposed to be great. It's supposed to have the best optical viewfinder like on the market. And the manual controls look awesome. The viewfinder looks awesome. They made some new improvements to the viewfinder. It's got this cool like hybrid optical digital viewfinder. And it just looks great. And the pictures look great.
You know what I love about it? It does Wi-Fi transfer. Has Wi-Fi built in.
I mean, it's like state-of-the-art. Like, it looks like a retro camera, but it's state-of-the-art. And it's $1,300. And then I think the cheapest Fujifilm lens I could find was like $400. Like, they're all super expensive. Most of them are like $800. So
yeah, that camera has a fixed lens. You can't take it off.
Can't you get converters?
You meant the conversion lenses. I don't know how much those are. I thought you were talking about, because they have a version where you can actually take the lenses on and off. So it comes like in just the body. It's a mirrorless camera, and then you can adjust the lenses and all that stuff. Sorry, guys, we're back. Weird Skype issues. But I bullied Skype around, and it's promised to behave for the rest of the show. So, Buster.
Yo.
Alex and my pick was the Fuji X100T.
Mm-hmm.
What would you like to see?
All right. I actually have another camera pick, actually.
Okay.
The X100T is a lovely camera.
I know what you're going to pick.
What am I going to pick?
Does it start with Sony?
Yeah. Yeah. It is.
I think you brought this one up last time we did gifts. What do you got? Because I actually don't remember the model.
Oh, it's the Sony A7 Mark II. They just announced it a few weeks ago, and it's amazing, amazing.
Why do you want this thing so bad? Because you seem like a pretty...
Well, it's like a full-frame sensor in the body of like a mirrorless camera. So you get, you know, like a pro DSLR quality and like a really, like the size of a frame as that Fuji X100. It's got like all the same stuff, like Wi-Fi connectivity plus NFC. And they have a 5-axis steady shot, so your pictures are never blurry.
5-axis?
Yeah, I don't know.
Damn.
Crazy stuff. But yeah, it just looks, it's a gorgeous camera, man. I just think it looks awesome.
How much does it cost?
$2,000.
How much are the lenses? Because it's a body only, right? It doesn't come with lenses.
That's with a 28 to 70 millimeter lens on it. And then the lens.
Do they take Sony lenses only, or is it?
There's a mount that you can use to use Canon lenses on it too.
Oh,
that's also
nice.
Why I want it. Yeah,
yeah, because I'm sure there's probably some good Sony lenses out there, but Sony isn't necessarily known for making renowned lenses.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, they have a few, but they're trying to ramp it up. But yeah, the fact that you could use the Canon, and I don't think you can use Nikon. I forgot the other company you can use on it.
Huh. Okay, that was the Sony.
A7 II.
I'm going to go with something that I've talked about on this show before, but has been haunting my dreams ever since. And that is the Currytech E3 Nitro electric bike.
Oh, dude.
It was the beginning of this year that I reviewed one of those, right? Do you guys remember when it was? So I saw this electric bicycle at CES, and got to chatting with these guys about the technology and stuff, and they're like, yeah, if you want, we can hook you up with a review unit, you know, for a couple weeks when you're in Seattle. So I took them up on the offer. Electric bicycles are so much fun. They kind of work in two different ways. They will either be totally self-propelling, so you can just, like, you know, crank the handlebar like you would on a motorcycle and the thing goes. Or the way most people normally use it is they amplify the power of your legs. So you pedal, and as you're pedaling, there's a motion sensing technology that kicks in when it knows that your legs are moving, and it amplifies your power. So you can go super duper fast, uphill, downhill, on straightaways. And I had a blast on this bicycle. I was riding it everywhere because it actually turns the bike into a commuter vehicle that is more suitable for everyone. You don't have to be in great shape to get around because this thing just goes so fast. In fact, they actually have to put a governor on them to keep them from going too fast because there's some kind of law against having one of these bikes go faster than 25 miles an hour. So they have to limit them. So when you get up to 25 miles an hour, the bike will help you stay at that speed, but you can kind of tell it's turning off more because if you didn't have this thing on, I saw a YouTube video of a guy who had hacked one of these things and he was going like 70 miles an hour through these trails, which is obviously incredibly dangerous for him and anyone else who might be on the bike path. These bikes are really expensive because they have these lithium ion batteries that are super expensive. I think they're like $4,000. So yeah. I can never really justify buying one. I mean, it's a $4,000 bicycle. How do you justify spending $4,000 on a bicycle? I haven't figured out a way yet. But I would love, love, love to get one of these things because it was super duper fun for 2 weeks. Eventually the price will come down and us, you know, normal mortals will be able to afford them. But for right now, they're just a toy for rich guys like Warren Buffett's and the Leander Keynes of the world.
You say $4,000? You know, yeah.
That's not bad, yeah.
It's a $15,000 bike.
What?
Yeah, it's the lightest production road bike ever made. It's the Trekker Munda.
Uh-huh.
And it's 11 pounds. It weighs just 11 pounds. You can pick it up with your pinky.
you have strong pinkies.
Yeah. That's without pedals. So if you add pedals, that probably adds another, that probably doubles the weight. The thing is crazy, crazy light.
What is it made out of?
Carbon fiber.
And are you really that much into road biking that you would want a bike that is that lightweight?
Well, you know, that's the thing. No, it's a shameful waste of technology. Because, you know, like, I mean, I've got a bike now that weighs, I think it's about 18 pounds, right? Which is pretty light for a road bike. I mean, so, you know, I mean, it's crazy. But spending $15,000, I should lose 7 pounds, you know, of flab. Uh-huh. And I would get the same effect. Rather than spending $15,000,
yeah, it would
I know, but there's lots of people who can't afford this thing, and I don't know, you know, I just like it for the beauty of the technology of this thing. I mean, it's so crazy, crazy light and so strong, and it's such a beautiful machine. They're so fascinating, bicycles, high end road bikes. I mean, they're about the most beautiful machines I think that anyone's ever made. They're absolutely gorgeous.
You know what's funny is when I was testing out that electric bike, I would blow past the guys on those really nice, you know, road bikes. And it's funny because they're hunched over and they're like sweating and their calves are like, you know, super XL sized.
Yeah.
And then there's me. I come in my jeans with my really like
smoking a cigarette,
hanging out my mouth. And I blow past them just riding casually. And I make sure I hit the bell on the way on your left. Really, really obnoxiously yell on your left as I blow past them.
Because that was my experience. Actually, the last time I went out with a group bike ride, it was with a Mission Bicycle Club, club. And at 6 a.m., everyone gathers in a mission. And they go up over to the Marin Headlands. And, you know, I'm doing pretty well. I'm thinking, yeah, this is pretty good. These guys look pretty good, but I can keep up. And then as soon as we get to the Marin Headlands, this guy takes off. And I think, oh, my God, he's on an electric bike. But he isn't. He's just like, you know, he just sprinted up the hill.
He wasn't on an electric bike.
No, he was just like, and in fact, he was racing with a couple of guys. So a couple of them took off. But he was up there. I hadn't even gotten a 16th up the hill, and he was already at the top.
The hill is where you really notice the power on the electric bike, too. I mean, those things. I saw a guy once go up a hill on an electric bike, and I didn't know it was an electric bike. Because if you didn't know this electric bike technology existed, you would never really understand how these guys are going so fast up a hill. So I saw this guy blast up a hill. He was probably going 15, 20 miles an hour. And he was just riding casually, dressed normally. He wasn't in all this biker gear. And at that time, I didn't know about electric bikes. And I was like, look at that guy. He's a monster. He's a beast. The guy is going so fast up that hill. And he's just sitting upright normally on a bicycle. But of course, he was on an electric bike. Do you guys have another pick? Because I have one more that I would like to share with you gents.
Well, I've got one more.
Okay, Leander, go ahead.
I'd like a 4K TV.
Oh, yeah. You were talking about that.
Yeah. Who has one?
Alex has one more as well, but please tell us about your 4K.
I'm sorry, they said had a 4K TV. I was like, what? Yeah. Well, my neighbors just got one. I just saw them carting it into the house yesterday, and they've set it up across from my kitchen. So I'm standing there washing the dishes, and I'm watching their 4K TV across the back fence. I was checking them out with my son at Best Buy the other day.
And yeah.
I was always like, you know, 4K, yeah, so what? You know, it's kind of overkill. You can't even see the difference, right, with 1080p if you're more than a couple of feet away. But you stand in front of these things at Best Buy, and it was absolutely trippy and transfixing and hypnotic. It was amazing.
The only thing about 4K televisions, though, Leander, is what do you watch on them?
Well, it's going to, you know, you're going to get more and more 4K content. I know it's limited. You know, I think, like, what is it? There's Netflix will stream a number of shows in 4K.
I think YouTube actually does, too, as well.
Yeah, right. There's dribs and drabs of content here and there. And in fact, most of the manufacturers, like Sony, you have to buy a special Sony box, right?
Mm-hmm.
That will stream just stuff from the Sony movie studio.
Yeah.
And so it's crazy.
I think no less than a $15,000 bike.
Yeah, true.
I think it is more realistic than a $15,000 bike. Yeah. For sure. Yeah,
right, for sure.
And the next 2 years, 4K is going to be the standard. I mean, I already see those things. I see them at Costco now. So right. If Costco's carrying them, you know, they're on their way to being ubiquitous. It's standard after 1080p.
Well, they're not going to make those panels anymore, are they? The old 1080p panels. I mean, it's just as cheap to make a 4K panel, apparently, as it is.
Oh, wow.
As expensive as to make a 4K panel as it is to make a 1080p panel. Yeah, the content's going to catch up, but then it's going to be real cheap. I mean, you can get a gigantic TV, 1080p TV now for what, $350 or something like that, $300?
What? A 4K television for $300?
No, not 4K, a 1080p. $350, I think, is some of the cheapest ones.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You
can go to Walmart and get them dirt cheap now.
Right. The price has really come down.
I mean, the pixels will be like one square inch each.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at my 5K iMac now, and, you know, it's really, really great. It's because it's so, so clear.
Mm-hmm. So you notice there's a market improvement in the visual quality of what you're seeing.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
Does it look normal when you're on websites and stuff? How does it look?
See straight away when people haven't upgraded that, you know, the their assets and things, like, you know, ads, funny enough, look really bad.
Yeah.
On a lot of websites, and also like graphics. And you can see immediately when there's a graphic that someone hasn't updated, because it's all fuzzy. It's weird. It's like, you know, it's just all, it's like someone smeared some Vaseline. It's kind of all fuzzy and wrong.
Okay, so Leander's got a 4K television, hopefully in his future. Alex, what do you want?
I really love the board game Settlers of Catan.
Oh, okay.
And yeah, and I would love to have all of the boards, because they have like all of the, like, it's not that expensive. You can get the main board with the extension for 5 to 6 players for like $60-$70, but to get all of the, like, the, you know, the Cities and Knights and the Seafarers and all these expansion packs that you can get, it's hundreds and hundreds of dollars.
I know, there's
It's pretty sweet when you combine all of them. I've seen videos of, yes, I am this much of a geek, but I've seen videos online of people who have combined like all of them and like made their own rules with all of them. And it's insane. Like, it looks like one of the most complicated, awesome board games ever. So,
are you going to be one of those guys that gets that and then goes and gets one of those big like game tables that are like $10,000?
Yeah. Well, it's crazy. They have people that literally do that. They make these like poker style tables for Catan that are designed to hold all your cards and your die and all that. It's crazy. It's got such a cult following, but
Your gift actually seems doable.
Yeah.
So my next pick is a BMW i3 electric car. I want it to show up like in the commercials where like someone's like, hey, Airfun, come outside. I want to show you something. And I go out there. It's snowing. There's like a sleigh, you know, like over there on the left, and then this BMW pulls up with a giant bow on the top, and then we all start laughing, and then someone hands me the keys to my new BMW, and I'm like, oh, you shouldn't have. That's what I want. I saw one of these i3 BMWs on the street about 2 weeks ago for the first time ever. The first time I ever saw these was at CES CES this year. And I drove one, as many of you know, and I could not stop smiling. This car was so much fun, and they're so quick and nimble. I had a great time, and I've always wanted to own one since then, but they're like $40,000 for a car.
They're demoing that car again this year at CES. It's got like this self-parking feature.
If you guys get a chance, go. They'll usher you right to the front. They'll give you lots of fine finger foods. You should go do it. It's really, really fun. I can never afford one of these things, at least not until they've been out for several years. But they're beautiful. Several decades. So when it has like 290,000 miles on it and the battery pack is like on its last legs,
yeah,
that's like when you can put a bow on the top and drive it up my driveway. Your gift, Alex, actually seems doable. Why don't you just buy them, dude?
Yeah, I mean, I will. I just can't justify spending like $400 on a board game right now.
Oh, for all the different board games. Well, I know a guy that owns a game shop. If you want me to help you live your dream,
I might be able to make
that happen for you.
Hook me up.
Okay, Buster, do you have one more or should we wrap it up there?
I don't really have anything.
You can't pick anything. There's nothing that Buster wants. Maybe like...
Like if Santa wanted to drop like a new like Retina MacBook Pro under my screen, like I'd be cool with that too.
I was thinking you'd want like a tent with like a built-in urinal and like light source.
Oh, well, I could go with like a VW van, you know, just a really cool souped up VW trailer van.
Do they still make those trailer vans?
I don't think so.
Well, that's like, are you talking about the ones like the retractable roof and stuff?
Yeah,
on top?
Yeah, the ones with the camper vans. That's like my dream car.
Yeah, that's old school. You need to get one of those little scamps, you know, the fiberglass caravans.
The scamps?
Trailers, yeah.
Oh, there's yeah?
Like, Casada and Scamp, and there's they're kind of crazy expensive, though. They're like little, but they're little small two-wheel trailers, and they can be pulled by a Fiat 500, by any passenger car. So it's perfect.
As long as you're not carrying any passengers.
Yeah. Right. I mean, you'd be amazed where I take that Fiat. I got it stuck in some mud this weekend.
Do you take it off-roading?
I mean, I took it hiking, and it was really rainy and muddy, so yeah, the trail was messed up. It was great. Had to have a friend push it out.
You should consider putting some monster tires on it. That would be so incredible. It's like you pull up to a light, you look to your left, and there's just a big set of wheels, right? And then you like look up into your left, and there's some guy sitting in a Fiat 500.
Oh man! And if we roll around on the strip with that thing in Vegas, it's gonna be baller.
I bet you Snoop Dogg would want to hang out with us. Dr. Dre would be there. Guess what he'd say?
Hell yeah!
Yeah! Hell yeah! Did I just cut someone off?
I don't know.
Okay, the wheels are coming off. Speaking of wheels, wheels are coming off. Let's wrap it up there. That's all the Cultcast we have for you guys this week. But hey, make sure you come hang out with us at our live Cultcast this Saturday, 1 p.m. Pacific, live.thecultcast.com. Tell us what your questions are, what our topic should be on facebook.com/thecultcast. This has been The Cultcast, the best 30-plus-minute album conversation you're going to hear all week long. New episodes of The Cultcast come out every Thursday night. I hope everyone has a very happy, happy holiday. A very merry ho-ho-ho to all of you. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you guys on Saturday, hopefully. Oh, 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 oh. With a very bad boy, Leo.